Welcome to My Money, My Lifestyle, a podcast where we discuss all things money because whether or not we like it, money matters. I'm your host, Maya Fisher-French, and it's that time of year when our medical schemes inform us how much more we are going to be paying for our medical cover. And, you know, with medical costs rising well above inflation, our spend on medical services, and this is certainly true in our household, is taking a bigger bite out of our budget. So it's really important that we spend time to understand our medical plan and to make sure we're making the most of it. And I actually wrote an article earlier this year about how I lost out on a 6,000 Rand claim from my medical scheme because I hadn't read the fine print. That's me. And I thought I knew everything. So to help us navigate our medical plans, explain gap cover, look at alternative lower cost options like health insurance, I'm joined by Gillian Larkin, who is head of healthcare consulting at financial advisory firm GTC. So, Jill, welcome. You are my go-to person when I write about medical schemes because you are so, so well informed. I'm really, really happy to have you on the podcast this week.
Maya, it's such a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for asking me. And I'm really always keen to share knowledge. It's one of those things that I really enjoy doing. So let's hit it.
That's why I'm picking your brain, you see. But before we get on to the details of the premium increases we've seen and the changes to benefits, I think it's important to explain why medical scheme contributions keep increasing above inflation. You know, what's driving these costs? Because I think there's often a perception that our schemes are just fleecing us as members.
I know that feeling because we get the same question from members over and over, and it does bear repeating the explanation which you give in the beginning when you meet somebody. So let's just go through that briefly then. So one of the reasons why members would experience an increase is because they demand more from their medical aid. So maybe they're more knowledgeable. They know now that the medical aid, like you, can cover more benefits or cover a benefit which you thought they didn't cover, and you will in future claim for that. So members demand more from their medical scheme. So that's one of the reasons. If we have a look at COVID, members didn't have much option. They couldn't use their medical aid. Then suddenly they could when COVID opened up again, and then members started to demand more from the medical aid. So that's one of the drivers of medical aid increases. If we have a look at service providers charge whatever rate they wish, as you know, but they also increase their tariffs at whichever rate they wish every single year. So there's no limit to the increases which service providers charge you. So that could be a hospital or a surgeon or just a general doctor. Their increases go up every single year as well. Let's look at technological advances. Well, those have been leaps and bounds this year. It's really wonderful, not just this year, but most years. People bring out new technologies. People bring out new medications that are more effective. And each of these come with their own development costs, which are recovered by charging a fee to you, the member. So only years down the line when those patents actually fall away do those costs come down. But those development costs need to be recovered. So those are the main drivers, apart from obviously normal inflation, which make medical inflation so much higher than our usual inflation rates. Schemes are really just a group of members which have gotten together. They all put their money into a pot, and this pot must pay for the benefits which the members want. If you choose a higher level of benefit that you want, then you're going to have to put more money into the pot. If you want a lower level, then you're going to have to put less money into the pot. So you decide how much cover you want, and the membership, the trustees in this case, decide what that premium is going to look like. So you own the scheme, you decide what level you want, and therefore the premium, based on the investigations which the trustees have done for you, decide what that premium is going to be. So yeah, it feels like we're going up every single year. It's because the benefits which we want from this pot go up all the time. So the costs go up. So we want to keep that benefit level, so we are prepared to pay or downgrade. So that's effectively what's happening with the medical increases year on year.
And I think it is important, Jill, just to explain that, you know, of that premium, you say it's 1,000 Rand, I think about 100 of it goes to the administrators. That would be your whoever's administrating the fund. But the rest goes into claims. That's what it is. And I think I remember looking before COVID, right? COVID changed things. They were sitting at close to like 97% claims ratio. So 97% of the premiums that were going in of that, you know, that was left after admin was being paid out. And I think that's important. It's important to understand that claims within the fund itself, what you put in is what comes out. And you have
because it's one of those not-for-profit kind of pots. The pot doesn't want to make a profit. It wants to pay out all of the benefits to the members every year. So that's effectively what they try to do.
So I think it's an important starting point to understand why the increases have gone up. But now we have had the increases all announced. We won't go into the fact that the Council of Medical Schemes is telling the companies they weren't supposed to tell everyone, but they, all of them, announce this average increase. You know, oh, our average is 10%, our average is 8%. But when you break it down, like we all know, averages are very, very, very deceptive. And I was looking at the plans. They differ. Some are going up 3%, some are going up 13% within the same medical scheme. So how do we make sure we know what ours is and if there's been any reduction in benefits?
Okay, so let's start right at the beginning of your question, which was a very long question, Maya. So you started off with the Council of Medical Schemes. You know, they do such an amazing job at the Council of Medical Schemes. They submit this report every single year, and it reflects why medical schemes would be increasing in that year, and it takes all sorts of things into account, including usage and the inflation rate and all the things that are happening in the economy. So it takes all of that into account, and it suggests an increased rate going forward. And the medical schemes generally aren't able to match that because the medical schemes want the increases to be much lower, and medical schemes don't have a choice but to increase it at a much higher rate. In that same circular that they release, they also say, please don't tell your members without having confirmed the increase rate through the Council for Medical Scheme. So it's not surprising if the medical schemes aren't able to match the increase rate which the Medical Schemes Council recommends, that they also don't listen to the Medical Schemes Council when they say, don't tell your members before I have okayed it. So that's the beginning part of your question. So just bear that in mind. So the medical schemes are trying their best. We want cover at a certain level, so increases are going to be at a certain level. Unfortunately, medical aides were supposed to first clear it with the council, which is understandable. The second part of your question was relating to the different schemes and the increased rates of those different schemes. If you were sick, you would want to be on a scheme which gives you the best possible cover. And within your medical aid, you reserve the right in January of every year to increase or to change your plan scheme to that best possible cover. And you will. If you are that ill, you will change to the highest possible cover. So the higher plans have the older members on who are able to afford it and the sicker members on because they absolutely need to have that cover. So therefore, the usage and the costs paid out from those best of the best kinds of schemes are much higher than ordinary schemes like saver plans, for example, at, you know, a basic cover level for in hospital. So those plans which people who aren't so terribly sick are on, are not necessarily the best of the best plans, whereas the sickly people are, or the people that don't want to carry as much risk are on those higher plans. Therefore, the premiums on those higher plans will go up because of the increased usage of those plans. They will go up at a higher rate. Likewise, we would expect, therefore, that the lower earners, on people who are healthy, would join a lower plan and therefore not have as much usage, which did not ring true this year. We noticed on the biggest medical aid that the lower plan had an unusually high usage ratio this year. So they also had an unusually high increase this year. So it does average out in the end, and we do declare, or shall I, the medical schemes arena does declare an average. It does make it easier to compare a medical aid provider against medical aid provider if you know what their average was for the year. But generally speaking, higher benefit plans have higher increase rates than average benefit plans, which have average usage. Mm. So that's why there is this anomaly of different increase rates and the average which gets declared.
And we had,
what else can I tell you?
Well, so we had this slight anomaly with Discovery Saver as well, where they only had, I think, a 3% increase, but they actually decreased the member savings accounts allocation. Mm. So that's a way of kind of saying, well, if you can't afford this, we're going to try and keep it down, but we're going to put less into savings. You know, are we going to see more of that?
I think it does deserve more investigation, but you need to actually have a look, because the savings is your money. Mm. And it was across all of Discovery's plans that the saver element went down by 5%. You need to understand the risk versus risk component comparison first for 2023 versus 2024. What was that actual increase? What was the risk benefit cost in 2023? What is the risk benefit cost in 2024? Because the saving element is your money. Mm. Whether you put 25% in or whether you only put 20% in, it's your choice still. I think FedHealth gives you the best option for choosing how much money you put into the savings account. So they give you that whole MediVault and you choose how much you want to spend, so therefore how much you want to repay on an ongoing basis. So Discovery has brought their medical savings account amount down. If you still would like to have an extra 5%, you can surely just put that into Discovery's Pay, which is their medical scheme's extra account, which you can run for yourself. So you can just put your money into there if you would like. But yeah, it does make you feel like the increase is lower, but you need to be very careful and clever when you look at that increase, because it may not necessarily be lower. You know, you might be looking at a 12% or 15% increase when you compare risk costs, mm-hmm. excluding the savings account.
And I think that's really important that you go and you say, okay, mm-hmm. And I think you made the point to me, Joe, when I was chatting to you about before last week, you were saying, you know, if your scheme's lower than the kind of medical inflation rate of 8%, find out why. There's possibly a reason for it. And in this case, exactly that, they reduced the savings. So there's never a free lunch, Jill. I think that's the lesson we can all learn from this.
And you know, with medical aids, you get what you pay for.
Exactly.
You have to know that.
Yeah, you get what you pay for. I don't think there's ever a free lunch. But I think it's also really important when you're selecting your scheme to understand what your scheme covers that actually directly relates to your personal requirements. Like, what do you need as a person? And then also look at, I see some of them came out with extended benefits, like Bonitas, for example, said they're going to keep a child as a dependent until age 24, for example. They came out with that this year and they increased some of the specialist remunerations. And then, of course, screening, preventative screenings. That was the one I was caught out on. I didn't realize how much my scheme gave me as preventative of screening. So, you know, how important is it when you're looking at these plans to make sure that, you know, you're spending all this money, that you're getting your, you know, bang for your buck?
Yeah, you know, when we have a look at medical schemes, we definitely would need to do a complete analysis of what you spend your money on. So what were you on previously? Were you on a medical aid? What are you on now? What do you want going forward? What do you normally spend your money on? So we would look at all of those kinds of things to analyze what members actually need. And then we'd be very careful to explain to them what the scheme actually gives you. So let's use Discovery as an example. They have that wealth fund this year. They've got that extra up to 10,000 rand that you can spend on preventative things. It's wonderful if you know about it and if you know what you have to do to access it. But if you don't know about it, you're bumbling along thinking, oh, my medical savings is all over. It's done. I don't know what else to do for the year. Whereas, like you say, you have extra options, additional things you can use, extra virtual visits you could possibly have, just as an example, or using your wealth fund if you're just simply activated, the activation of which is free anyway, to get these extra benefits. So you need to know that, what the extra benefits are. You need to know what the in-hospital cover benefit is that you need. Do you actually need a 200% cover? Or could you do with a 100% cover and adding a gap cover to it, for example? Or one of your previous discussions with me was also about, do we have the option to combine different benefits with one another, maybe inside a scheme and outside a scheme? You need to be aware of whether there are any networks near you, any network hospitals that you would be happy to go to, even if they aren't near you. Would you still be happy to go to that hospital to get a lower premium? You need to have a look at these things, because every single one of these things is going to affect your budget going forward.
Absolutely.
Like, for example, you, like, for example, you spending that extra 6,000 Rand when you perhaps didn't actually need to.
And, you know, talking about specialists, you know, just checking before you just go to the specialist your GP tells you to, go and check if they're on, they're a network, a member of, of your team's network. There's a big difference. And I must tell you, there's two things that I because I knew about it, I've saved so much money using a virtual doctor. Well, actually, the Hello Doctor. And my son is at university and he phones me occasionally. He says, Mom, I'm so sick. I need to go see the doctor. And he's a, you know, boy. So I say to him, look, let me just get Hello Doctor to phone you. Hello Doctor, it's a doctor calls him. Invariably, it's just a sinus because he's got allergies, and tells him, gives him a script for an allergy medicine. And that's it. And it's free on my medical scheme. I've worked out, I've saved about 1,000 Rand using that this year so far. And the other one, John, I must tell you, my husband's had so many hospitalizations this year. He fell off his mountain bike. You know all about that. And I knew about the free, that when he goes into hospital, we get 7 days of medication, post-hospital medication included in that hospital visit. Do you know I had to fight with the hospital to get that? They didn't issue it from the pharmacy. They issued it from, wanted to issue it from Dischem, which wasn't part of the network. And I, it was only because I knew about it that I actually was able to do it. So exactly that. If you don't know, then you can't make the most of these covers.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of them say if you don't get the medication in the hospital gives you a script to go home with, you're paying for that out of your savings.
Exactly.
So if you are going to get medication, get your hospital to dispense it to you. One of those little basic rules that not all medical aids cover it, but a lot of them do, if you know about the rules. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I agree.
And I wanted to, you mentioned gap cover. Oh my goodness, gap cover has saved us this year. Two surgeries. So I think let's just start by explaining what gap cover is, what it's not, and why do I need gap cover if I'm already paying so much money to my medical scheme?
Okay, so let's go for that. So gap cover is when you sell it to somebody, you really are going to tell them it's for in-hospital events only. However, there are some additional out-of-hospital benefits which you would get, like, for example, emergency room cover or cancer co-payments or co-payments for having a scan done when you're not in hospital, or sublimit extenders for having artificial limbs, or, you know, those sort of things. These are all add-ons to gap cover, but gap cover's biggest component is the in-hospital gap benefit. So when you go and see a doctor, you know that doctors can charge you whatever rate that they want to. You know as well that you've joined a medical aid with a set cover percentage, 100%, 150%, 200%. It's very unlikely that your doctor's going to charge at that level. He's going to charge whatever rate he wants to charge. And when he sees you in hospital, unless it's a prescribed minimum benefit, you are going to be stuck covering the difference in cost between what the doctor charges and what the medical aid pays. So you have to fund that difference yourself unless you have a gap cover. Gap cover is something which we almost insist that our clients have, because who do you think they're going to phone and say, but Jill, you said I had a 100% medical aid and now the doctor isn't covering everything. Because the doctor's charging at 200%, 300%, 400%. But I had a 100% medical, and then the whole discussion about 100% of cost versus 100% of medical scheme rate. Mm. So there's a big difference there, and that's where gap covers come in. They cover that portion which you would normally have to cover yourself out of your back pocket to a certain sublimit. I think this year it's 198,000. Which is the maximum that it's prepared to pay per member per year. So that's the overall limit on these gap covers. But yeah, we find it's very, very essential for our clients to have gap cover. Mm. Some of them may be attached to medical aid, some of them may be separated from a medical aid, but effectively it's one of those things which we almost find mandatory to sell to our clients.
I just want to clarify what you've just said about attached to the medical aid and not. Obviously, all gap cover only works if you have a medical aid. So what you're talking about is if your medical aid offers it as an insurance as well, because you can only, it's not like you can buy, you don't have a medical scheme and you buy gap cover. You can't do that. It only works in conjunction with a medical scheme.
Yeah. Well, let's just clarify. You can do it, but it's pointless because it will only pay over and above what your medical aid paid. It's a top-up insurance. It will only insure over and above what your medical aid paid. So you can buy it, but it's useless if you don't have a medical aid because it can't pay out anything. So yeah, effectively, it only works in conjunction with your medical aid. Some medical aids, it's very noisy. Sorry. Some medical aids have the same name, and we're going to use Discovery. So Discovery has a Discovery gap cover as well as a medical aid. So they are two separate registered entities under two separate sections under the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. So they are literally one under the long term, one under the Medical Schemes Act, and one under the short term insurance. So they are definitely different separate licensed entities, but the paper trail can be seamless because of the administration provided by certain companies. That may not be the be-all and end-all of gap covers. It may be worth your while to simply just fill out an extra form to get the benefits or additional benefits that some gap covers do provide. So, yeah, they are separated in name and then forms, and some administration systems put them together. But they are definitely separate entities and need to be compared separately to one another.
And what are you looking at price-wise for gap cover? And is it not worth just going onto a fully comprehensive medical scheme instead?
Fully comprehensive medical scheme probably can cost you about 7,000 Rand at a 300% level for one member, and probably about 2,500 Rand at a 100% level for one member, with a gap insurance taking you up to, if you were on 100%, probably adding an extra 500% of cover for in-hospital benefits, probably about 350 to about 600, depending if it's a family rate or an individual rate. And then under 65s and over 65s sort of have a different premium level as well.
Gosh, so you're getting, so you have your basic hospital up to 100 for 2,500, you're adding on maybe 600, so you're on 3,100, knowing that if you go to hospital, your bills will be 100% covered. I mean, we saw that this year. I mean, it was incredible how the gap cover stepped in. I mean, we're talking some serious surgery that was involved.
Shaman.
Okay.
Well, I'm sorry for your husband, but I'm glad you've had the experience with which to have this discussion.
Exactly. So, without that, I think we would be having very different conversations at home about him ever climbing on a mountain bike ever again. In fact, he'd have to sell the mountain bike to pay for the surgery.
Shame, man. I'm sorry.
So talking about, we've spoken about gap cover, which is an insurance which you add onto your medical scheme. But I want to talk now about health insurance. This is primary healthcare insurance. This is huge, Jill. I mean, I get a press release every week from some new provider. Even Dis-Chem, Time Bank have brought one out. This is big, big business. So let's just explain what health insurance is and why it is not a medical scheme.
Okay, let's go for that. So this is insurance, like insurance for your car. It has a specific value that you're insuring, and a specific premium, which is pretty much unlike medical aid. Medical aid doesn't have, well, there's only about one or two that have an overall annual limit left on them. So medical aids generally don't have an overall annual limit for what they're prepared to pay out from a benefits perspective. Your car would be insured at a certain level and you would have a premium for that. Your health insurance would be at a certain level and you would have a premium for that. Your medical aid would be a premium for an health insurance that could be unlimited. The focus of medical aid, sorry, that sounded weird. The focus of medical aid is on in-hospital benefits mostly, because that's where the biggest cost comes from. Whereas the focus on insurance benefits are mostly on out-of-hospital benefits. The stuff which you really need to use every day, like doctor visits or dentist visits or spectacles and glasses or x-rays or pathology, not necessarily the in-hospital stuff. When you look at a medical aid, you know that a medical aid has a prescribed minimum benefit component to it. So every single medical aid that's out there, all registered medical aids, must cover this prescribed minimum benefit. You'll also know that there's been quite a lot of discussion about low-cost benefit options. So low-cost benefit options need to be brought into medical aid. So they need to be registered as medical aids. The demarcation regulation which came out allowed for an exemption of these primary care low-cost benefit options not to form part of a medical aid if you've applied for this exemption. That means that when you do become part of a medical aid, you have to provide these prescribed minimum benefits. You'll also be aware that the Department of Health has been doing a lot of investigation into these low-cost benefit options, and they've desperately tried to bring something to the market which is going to require an overhaul of the prescribed minimum benefits. They are too high. They cost about 800 Rand or 800 and something Rand per member per month on a medical aid. You can't put that 800 Rand as a premium on a low-cost benefit option primary care. Mm. It just doesn't work. There's just too much to have to cover. Mm. Some benefits which are added to the health insurance, the primary care products, can include an in-hospital benefit, like 1 or 2 million rands worth of hospital cover that you can have, or a stabilization benefit where you get stabilized in the closest private hospital and then moved to a public hospital. These benefits have all got overall annual limits on them. Mm. The benefits that you're getting from these insurance products are so set that you would be getting specific rand amounts. They're lower because the benefits are lower, remembering that you get what you pay for on these things. Medical aids don't have those overall limits that these health insurance covers do have.
Again, you get what you pay for. And I mean, you can have exclusions, you can have waiting periods. But I mean, I was having a look at Sunland Primary Care, and I think it starts off at about 300 and rand or something for the main member. So, you know, they are coming in reasonably, you know, they're reasonably priced. But then again, you know, you're going to have limits on it. But I suppose for a family, and I see a lot of employers using it as well to at least make sure that their staff have some kind of day-to-day benefit. But I want to ask you this question, Jo, because I was obviously unpacking all the schemes this last week. And I see FedHealth. It was an interesting one. FedHealth has come out with a very inexpensive hospital plan. I think it's FlexiFed Savvy or something. It's 965 Rand for a principal member. I think that makes it one of the cheapest in the market. And if you take your medical tax credit or 364 Rand, which by the way is only, you can only do for a medical scheme, not a medical insurance, okay? That's costing you about 601 Rand a month after the tax benefit. But they've put a package deal together with Sunland Primary Care for the day-to-day stuff. So does it make sense to look at a really basic entry-level hospital plan, which gives you all the prescribed minimum benefits and that hospital cover, and then buy your day-to-day through an insurance product? Or should you just upgrade your medical scheme product? Like, have you looked at those options?
Stretch my mind, Maya. Okay, so benefits and risks. So you decide how much risk you are prepared to take on at any point. You choose which medical aid you want based on your tolerance for risk. If your tolerance is low, you're going to prefer to share the risks with someone else. So you're going to choose a medical aid. The higher the plan you choose, the less risk you take on. That seems quite simple. You soon realize that the less risk that you carry, the higher the premium is that you're expected to pay because somebody else is carrying the risk for you. Let's have a look at these insurance products now quickly, because their premiums are rather low, as you know. You've said so yourself. You had a look at them. It's not because they've suddenly stumbled upon the holy grail of life insurance, of health insurance cover. It's because that the benefit they provided are smaller than than the risk that you carry. So the benefits are tiny, the risk you carry is high. The premiums are small, the risk you carry is high. So, your question, when is it a good time to combine the two? What should we be looking at? And this is where personal financial planning comes in to a great degree. So if you have a huge savings account somewhere and you can carry the risk yourself, then you may be in a good position to choose a higher level hospital plan with an insurance for day-to-day cover. Maybe that combination works for you because you've got a big savings account somewhere to cover when that insurance benefit runs out. But if you are like most South Africans, we're under enormous pressure, obviously financial pressure, with the increase in electricity, petrol, food, and now even medical aid adding to our burdens that we have to bear. From a financial point of view, we find that very few have savings accounts. Very few South Africans have savings account. And everyone is trying to look at reducing their costs. Many of us South Africans will then select lower cover plans. That's just what we're going to do. With no out-of-hospital benefits from medical aids, or supplement these with small benefits that we can get from these insurance plans, because that's what we can fit into our budget. We carry a huge risk ourselves when we do that. We need to understand that we would have to frequent a public facility if something happened to us, because or we'd have to cover the private doctor costs ourselves with all of the medicines that go for that, because we've chosen to downgrade and not have a plan, or have a plan with a small a primary care plan attached to it. So many of us are risking it, as you know, as our choices become increasingly burdensome and smaller, because we've got smaller amounts of our budget that we can actually use. So low-cost benefit option is being worked on, as we have spoken about. They have promised to have a look at that in time. Hopefully it will give us an answer for South Africans that are feeling the pinch to a very great degree. So could we combine them? Yes, we could. Some people already do. Not necessarily the same product, so not using perhaps Sanlam and Sanlam. You know, you could use, I'm not going to mention names, but you could use a medical aid with a different service provider for primary care, and you could combine those two. Is it more beneficial? Effectively, no. It works out to almost the same bottom line costings, with a few rands difference here and there. Some more beneficial to have your own savings and get all your benefits from your medical aid, and some where it still works out more beneficial to have a combination of a hospital plan, a gap cover, and a primary care plan. But in the end, you get what you pay for. And having a medical aid with a better benefit, which is unlimited, if you can afford it, is still going to be better for you than having a combination product with a smaller limited benefit as your out-of-hospital benefit. So that is what it looks like in the end. But if you look at the financial planning part of it, what does this member actually end up affording? What can we put together for this member? If they really cannot afford it, then you have no option but to look at other alternatives. Mm. But we really do try to assist members to stretch their budgets as far as possible, looking at everything else before we start to cut benefits on the healthcare side.
Well, thanks, Jo. I think you've really unpacked a lot in here, and hopefully people are going to be guided and have a little bit of a better understanding about how all these products come together, what to look for, how to make the most out of it. But, and you know, it is very difficult. And as you said, people are, I think we worked out that you would need to be earning about 17,000 rand a month to afford a medical scheme in South Africa. There's not a lot of people there's a lot of people who are not earning that. So this is, I suppose, where the medical insurance products do step in, where they're filling some sort of gap, but again, relying on the government hospitals. I'm not even going to touch NHI now, because that would take us another half an hour. But obviously, that's something that's going to come into play. But thank you so much, Jill, and I really, really appreciate your time today.
Hang in there, South Africans. We're all in the same boat. We're all battling the same demons and we are stretching our budgets as far as possible. Thank you, Maya.